DW Africa Link.
The promises are always the same: easy money, low risk, and faster returns. And yet, the ending never changes. The platforms vanish, websites go dark, and investors are left with nothing except pain and huge debts. We have all seen how fast these promises of easy money spreads, from WhatsApp groups to church meetings. They often start small, and soon they are everywhere. But soon, they are nowhere. Many in Cameroon, where I come from, will never easily forget what schemes like the Emerald Investment Club, Liplimal, Chimal, and Sunrun did to them. Today, everyone is talking about the CBEX and the devastation it has caused in Nigeria. The question is whether it will stop there, and if not, what can be done about these seemingly Lagos schemes? Stay tuned. My name is Mimi Mefoneu, and welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Across Africa, many are still drawn in by the idea of making quick and easy money. These promises often come through fancy apps, viral messages on WhatsApp, and talks about things like cryptocurrency. But these are often Ponzi schemes. They are simply tricks to take people's money, and they are causing a lot of financial pain. A recent example is CBEX, a website and app in Nigeria that said it could trade digital money and give people up to 15% profit every month. Lots of Nigerians, hoping to escape rising prices and lack of good jobs, put their money in. For a while, it seemed to work. The first people we invested got paid. And if you brought in new people, you got bonuses. Everyone got excited. But then, in early 2025, people couldn't withdraw their money out. Soon, the website and social media disappeared, and no one from the company answered messages. People were left with nothing. CBEX isn't the first time this has happened, and sadly, it might not be the last. They are just like the old MMM scam, which cost Nigerians a huge amount of money in 2016. Experts in Nigeria say people there have lost over 911 billion naira to these scams in the last 23 years. So why do people keep falling to these tricks? And could governments do more to stop them? To discuss this topic with me, I have Ekemesit Efiong. He is an economic expert. And we also have DW's Abiodun Jamiu joining us all the way from Africa to talk about this very important topic. I want to start with you, Mr. Efiong, to find out from you, what are your thoughts about Ponzi schemes? Is that something that you think positively about?
Actually, from a financial standpoint, Ponzi schemes are remarkably simple, but also very, very negative and potentially devastating in its effects. So what's a Ponzi scheme? A Ponzi scheme is a setup where money from new investors is used to pay returns to earlier investors. That entire setup, right, paying old people with new investments creates the illusion of a profitable enterprise. But with most Ponzi schemes, there's no actual business activity, no products really sold, no real investments generating returns, right, at their heart. It's really just all about moving money around until the scheme inevitably collapses under its own weight when new investments slows down and the crisis of confidence, right, begins. And people who are already investors in those schemes try to withdraw their monies at the same time, but there's no liquidity to fulfill those withdrawals.
So is it safe to say that it's a scam? Is that the best way to describe it?
It is safe to say that, because most securities regulators, right, in Africa, but also increasingly around the world, require any sort of investment product to be backed by legitimate economic activity that actually generates returns. So whether it's the stock of a company that's an actual going concern that's generating, right, at least revenue, it may not necessarily be profitable, but it's at least generating revenue and it's carrying out legitimate business, or it's a sovereign or a government-backed bond where states issue out bonds that are backed by the full faith and confidence of those countries, or it is commodities, or it's the pricing of commodities, whether it's cocoa or gold, whether it's copper or crude oil. A legitimate economic activity must undergird the design and the offer of an investment product to the general public. And with most Ponzi schemes, like I said earlier, since there's no real business activity that underpins them, it is as good as, you know, deceiving people to collect their own monies fraudulently. And that's why in, you know, many African countries, it is a crime to set up and, you know, maintain a Ponzi scheme.
So we receive messages from victims of Ponzi schemes like on a daily basis. And that's why we decided to pay attention to this particular story. Jamil, you are a correspondent on the ground and you've probably spoken to some of the victims. Can you walk us through what some of them have experienced?
I think basically in the country right now, a lot of people are still trying to get their money back. Because with this particular, with the recent one that happened, most of them were, you know, locked out of their accounts. Their withdrawal were delayed. In fact, at some point, they were asked to pay verification fee so that they can be able to, you know, get their money back. These are all hallmark or footprints of a Ponzi scheme. So for many of them, they are currently in trying to get their money back. But a lot of people based on the ground are saying, even among Nigerians are saying that it's all about greed, quick breakthrough for what they do not work for. But definitely, it is not really all about having the desire to have quick wealth or greediness, but basically about the fact that there's a fertile environment for these Ponzi schemes to actually operate, to thrive in the country. We all know about the current economic crisis in the country, and a lot of people really want to boost their income. So some of them put their money in this Ponzi scheme. And right now, some of them invest even money for their daily needs. Some invest money from their friends. In fact, some borrowed money to invest into this Ponzi scheme. And if any of them, they are currently unsure if they are ever going to get their money back.
Then, so I just wanted to come back to our expert, Mr. F. Young, to find out from you, is it getting harder to tell a scam apart from a legitimate investment in today's digital age?
In many cases, it is 100%. Scams today don't look like the scams of our parents or the scams of our childhood, right? Oftentimes, they look like tech startups. They look like fintech apps. They look like boutique investment firms. Many Ponzi enterprises invest in sleek websites, they invest in polished mobile ads, they feed on the virality of word of mouth marketing, especially now with digital tools and social media. A lot of them get professionally branded. I talked about the fact that some of them even go as far as being registered corporately, even though they do not pursue securities registration, which would often offer security regulators the opportunity to scrutinize the investment products and the investment schemes that they offer. Many of them invest in customer service teams. With the latest Ponzi scheme that just got burst in Nigeria, they even had physical offices and a robust social media presence. What's really happening is that technology has lowered the barrier to entry for professional-looking scams. And so for the average person, right, the visual difference between a scam website and a real one is almost zero. Now also in the influencer age, with many people posing as financial professionals, investment experts, financial influencers on social media, right, and them collecting corporate sponsorship or one-time sponsorships in order to promote these investment products, many of whom those influencers themselves do not fact-check or do their due diligence on, right, it's easy for customers, potential customers, but just the general public to fall for fraudulent online reviews, forged media coverage that is often paid for. The CBEX Ponzi scheme that just burst up now even went as far as sponsoring corporate events, sporting activities, as well as scholarships, as it were, and received, you know, some celebrity endorsements. And so it's really, 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 really getting difficult, right, to distinguish between the real and the fake. But and then when you add in, you know, sort of the rise of cryptocurrency, the fact that almost anyone right now can set up their own cryptocurrency. You talk about the advent and the increase in popularity of forex trading, which are areas which many people don't fully understand, because the level of financial sophistication and investment knowledge you need to have, right, is significant. People can essentially create fake cryptocurrencies or fake forex, right, investment houses and investment platforms, right, to deceive and collect the funds of, and in many cases, the life savings. And it's really becoming challenging, right, even for professionals like us to really tell the fake from the legitimate.
So, Jamil, our guest is talking about an important issue here, fact-checking, which seems to be very, very absent when it comes to victims of Ponzi schemes. Every now and again, people fall victims almost every day. We say that differentiating between what is right and wrong online is almost impossible, but still online we have victims on a daily basis. So it should serve as that lesson for others who want to invest in Ponzi schemes. With all these people falling prey, why do you think Nigerians particularly are still vulnerable to these kinds of schemes and scams?
A lot of Nigerians are still vulnerable to Ponzi schemes because of a number of factors. On the surface, we will say that maybe it is because of the desperation for quick financial breakthrough. But when you look at it from a more deeper perspective, you will see that Nigerians are battling with economic hardship, unemployment, and this to some extent makes a lot of people to want to boost their source of income from irrespective of the kind of scheme they are getting themselves into. Also, a particular scheme that busted recently actually had a lot of people infested, because they also had some kind of some level of legitimacy in the fact that they had the physical office, it disconnects from what we had in the past. They invested in promo and influencer that actually, you know, put these schemes off funds. I think there is also a kind of trust or a sort of distrust in the financial system to some extent, because a typical Nigerian setting or rural settings, we want to invest in businesses or schemes that are introduced to them by someone they know. So Ponzi schemes rely heavily on this system of legitimacy, in which people use word of mouth to actually advertise this business, to bring in order into the scheme to actually thrive. So basically, these are some of the factors or some of the issues that made Nigeria quite very vulnerable to Ponzi schemes. We will also not forget the fact that there are also lax regulations around the issue of these schemes operating that actually enables them to thrive. Because if the authority had actually smacked down on them for a very long time, when we had MMM, when we had other Ponzi schemes that had come over and over again, then we would have had something quite very serious, and people would know a little more about some of these Ponzi schemes.
So, Mr. Ifeanyi, when you listen to Jamil, there's also this saying that once bitten, twice shy. But I think when it comes to Ponzi schemes, it's something that doesn't really apply. So what I wanted to find out from you is, the footprints of Ponzi schemes remain the same over the years. Referral-based withdrawals, countdown timers, VIP access, and so on and so forth. So how do these gamified elements trick the brain?
The thing is, at its heart, right, Ponzi schemes are trying to hack a basic principle of human psychology and some of those things Jamil has already referred to. So things like referral bonuses, for example, tap into our social behavior and our need for social proof in and of itself. So when we make money by bringing in friends and family, we feel validated, we feel trusted, it feels as though we are creating an inclusive environment for the shared development of wealth. And that just makes people into unwitting promoters, right, of the scam. Plus, it's very hard for many people to say no to their siblings, to say no to their parents, to say no to their children, when they are the ones who are referring, right, to some of these schemes. So in my day job, for example, as a consultant and as someone who watches the economy, my parents, for example, my mother leans quite significantly on me when she's making significant economic decisions if I am an unwitting victim of a scam investment scheme, I'm that much more likely to pull my mother right into it. Things like countdown timers, for example, you know, those sort of things create artificial urgency. The fact that oftentimes a lot of these schemes are accompanied with sort of sign-up bonuses that are time-limited if you don't sign up within the next. And oftentimes, it's a very short time window of, say, 24 to 72, at most 96 hours. And we know from human psychology and we know from studies that when people feel time pressure, they're more likely to act impulsively. They're less likely to think rationally and think through what the potential consequences, especially negative consequences of their behavior, you know, might be. It triggers that flight or flight response, which basically says you should act now or you potentially miss out on the quote unquote opportunity of a lifetime, which is, you know, a slogan that many Ponzi schemes have used from time immemorial. Things like VIP access and levels feel into our desire to build status and exclusivity, obviously, or wire to value things that seem rare or seem reserved, right, for the few. When platforms offer higher returns for elite, quote unquote, elite members, or make you feel special for investing more, or offer more of an investment bonus if you commit more resources as someone who is already invested into a Ponzi scheme, that your sense of pride, ambition, or even greed. And so what you see is a lot of these gamified tricks sort of employed to short-circuit critical thinking, to short-circuit rational thinking, and it stops a lot of people from analyzing what the real risk profile of a lot of these investment products are, which every investment professional in every facet of finance will tell you is the key thing to recognize about investments, which is there is the potential risk of loss, but there's also the potential risk of gain, and you should do your homework while you are chasing rewards to evaluate and be sure that your risk appetite can take a significant right amount of loss. A lot of these Ponzi schemes try to shut down right those mechanisms, as it were, using a lot of these tried and tested psychological tricks.
Throughout this conversation, we have been blaming everyone except the governments that are in place that should put laws. I think Mr. Ifeong mentioned that earlier, that there's need for regulations and so on, but we've not talked a lot about it. We've blamed the victims, urged them or told them the need to like fact check, verify and ensure that what they're getting into is something that is authentic and apt. And we've also blamed even the Ponzi schemers themselves. I mean, everyone involved except the governments that should be regulating the whole business scheme. What I wanted to find out is how important, Mr. Ifeong, is the aspect of financial literacy when this is concerned? When I say financial literacy, recently the government of Nigeria passed a new security act to kind of regulate some of these issues that are affecting people, not just locally, but also online. Can it actually make it harder for Ponzi schemes to operate and at the same time protect some of these victims?
In theory, it should, right? So under the new Investment Securities Act, it does expand the power of regulators. It updates the definitions, right, to cover new types of scams, especially digital ones. The old Investment and Securities Act dated from 2002, and Nigeria's digital economy practically did not exist when that law came into force. So the new Securities Act, it has brought securities regulation right into the digital age. It does some work in terms of speeding up the legal process, so shutting down illegal schemes. Authorities now have the power with the basis of court order to freeze suspicious accounts faster. Securities agencies now have to take cognizance right of potentially fraudulent websites as well as social media accounts, right? And it factors that into its monitoring and the penalties for unlicensed operators, which the Securities and Exchanges Commission of Nigeria came out last week to emphasize CPEX was not, and this is where it ties into the financial literacy conversation that you alluded to in the earlier part of your question, which is that the onus still lies on the general public and on customers, but also on financial influencers and also financial professionals, right? To check to be sure that anybody offering an investment product is not only registered with the Corporate Affairs Commission, which is required for all Nigerian companies, but they are registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which means that the SEC has had a look at what sort of potential products they are likely to offer, whether the people who are the promoters of the company actually have the expertise and the experience to be able to set up a company of that kind. If not, they're not going to get right SEC certification. But you're also right in the sense that government can do a bit more in expanding right the bounds of financial literacy. There are very few public service announcements, for example, either digitally or even within traditional media, which encourages people to look out for the telltale signs of a Ponzi scheme. And my organization, right, SBM Intelligence, has cataloged something like 38 separate Ponzi schemes that have been set up and have scammed Nigerians of their savings and their hidden resources since 2016 alone. So this is a clear and present problem in a country like Nigeria. We're currently going through significant economic challenges. Most Nigerians are poor or they are severely financially stressed. The macro environment is very rich and is very ripe for the continued development of Ponzi schemes. And the regulators should be more proactive and less reactive as they currently are in ensuring that Nigerians are able to look for the telltale signs, right, of a potential Ponzi scheme. So in that direction, the new law, the new regulations, some of the pronouncements that we're seeing from government are helpful, but they can do a lot.
And hopefully it can actually do something. Jamiu, I would come to you before I conclude this discussion, a very interesting one, of course, to just ask you, with the security acts that are in place now, are we going to start seeing fewer Ponzi scheme victims or none at all?
I think just like Mr. Effiong said, but without active enforcement and public awareness, Ponzi scheme will just keep adapting to the realities of to new realities of Nigeria. For many on the ground, currently, they don't feel like they are protected by the government. They feel abandoned, and there is no way. In fact, some of them are even have little faith that authority can get their money back or prevent future scams. But with the new Security Act, there's a way that Nigerian government or the authority can actually nip this in the bud by maybe massive public education campaigns, fast prosecutions of scammers. In fact, recently, the EFCC just declared some of these scammers wanted. And also creating more accessible, trustworthy investment options for more Nigeria. I think this will go a long way to actually stem the tides of Ponzi schemes in the country.
So the two of you have 30 seconds to respond to this question. I just want honest answers from both of you. Do we really need Ponzi schemes? Should it even exist in the first place?
Oh, no, not at all. There are a wealth of investment options out there, and many of them offer a decent return, although not the sort of returns that Ponzi schemes promise. So no, we don't need them, and we have legitimate, because we have a wealth of investment opportunities out there.
And Jamiu?
I think personally that we don't need them at all in any way. They are only a fleece, on the vulnerability of Nigeria. So basically, I just feel like there are other better investment options, though they will not have bigger, like 100% returns that Ponzi scheme offer. So basically, yeah, we don't need them. They are just, fleecing on the vulnerability of Nigeria.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. What I take home from this discussion is that easy money has got a lot of consequences, and there's need for verification. You have to make sure that you are getting yourself involved in the right thing before you invest your money. Be careful out there and be safe.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Let's take a look at Rwanda, a country that's taken some of the boldest steps on the continent to tackle Ponzi schemes. In recent years, Rwandan authorities have cracked down hard on unregulated digital investment platforms. They've gone after Shimmer and SuperLive that promised high returns but delivered heartbreak. After thousands lost money, the government stepped in banning these schemes and launching criminal investigations against their promoters. The Rwandan Investigative Bureau has since issued repeated warnings calling many of these so-called investment clubs illegal and unsustainable. And get this, behind the scenes, they've quietly ramped up enforcement. They did this by using digital surveillance laws to monitor and shut down suspicious platforms. Rwanda went beyond arrests and is also working to educate the public, launching media platforms to alert citizens about the dangers of get-rich-quick platforms, especially those that spread on WhatsApp or promise crypto returns without regulations. Still, challenges remain as Rwanda pushes forward with its digital transformation agenda. The same online tools that promise inclusion and innovation are being exploited by fraudsters. The question now is, how do you strike the right balance between openness and oversight for Nigeria and my country, Cameroon, and those facing similar crises? Rwanda offers both a cautionary tale and a potential blueprint. This is one that shows enforcement, education, and cross-border collaboration, as we discussed with our guests, may be the only way forward. And that's it for this edition of the Africa Link podcast. So remember, you are not just a listener, but also part of the community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember to follow so that you can catch all the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Josie Mahachi. My name is Mimi Mefoneu, and thank you so much for listening. And until next time, bye.
DW. Made for Minds.